Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Medical marijuana became legal, technically, in the Buckeye State more than a year ago, but patients still can't legally buy marijuana, and doctors still can't become certified to prescribe it or recommend it, I should say. Joining us is Cleveland.com reporter Jackie Borchardt. Welcome back, Jackie.
Thanks for having me.
Also attorney and legislative analyst for the Ohio Medical Marijuana Advisory Committee, Ted Bebart. Welcome to the show.
It's a pleasure. Thank you, Ann.
The state is said to be on schedule with this whole process. So we know the governor signed the law, I think June 8th or 6th a year ago. Mm-hmm. And now they're saying that it won't be until September 2018, around about, when people will actually be able to buy it.
Mm-hmm.
So this is on schedule.
Yeah, and there is a caveat here with that September date, knowing that the mandate is that the program be fully operational. Now, nobody's actually said what fully operational means, as a patient advocate for the Medical Marijuana Advisory Committee, my goal is to make sure that at that date, patients do have access to medicine. But we all understand the regulatory process is its own animal. I can say that I'm quite proud of our legislature, of our executive agencies. They have kept a significant pace here, and I would consider ahead of schedule. So I think that that's the appropriate signpost now is where we are today. And I would say that we're ahead of schedule in that regard.
And Jackie, off air, you said it's kind of like grease lightning, actually, compared to a lot of things that gets done very slowly in the legislature.
Right. I mean, this actual piece of legislation only took about 6 weeks to pass, which is, especially for something this, a topic this big and new for many legislators, was really quick. But what has taken the longest amount of time is that the bill, you know, just basically, like Ted said, it set out a 2-year timeline to get all of this done. And so that's, you know, I hear a lot of complaints from patients that this is taking too long and a really long time. But that was always the intent of the legislature. And when you look at some other states that have implemented programs through the legislative through legislation as opposed to like a ballot measure, typically it does take more than 2 years to get a program set up.
Except that there are other states that have set up programs. Are there lessons to be learned from those states? Ted Bebart, I mean, do we have to reinvent the wheel in Ohio?
No, we don't. And I think that that's really been something that's allowed Ohio to benefit from the past failings of other states and really capitalize on successes. What we've seen in other states, whether they've gone by ballot initiative or through legislative measure, the devil's in the details on this. It's really the rulemaking process that really spells out what are going to be the meets and bounds of the program. And again, that does take time, and it should, because we need a thoughtful approach that provides not only a safe, affordable medicine that's going to really discourage the black market, but also encourage migration for physicians and patients and ensure that all Ohioans are protected through the regulatory approach.
Is there a chance that with so much bureaucracy surrounding it, it could become unaffordable?
Always.
Because insurance won't cover it at this point.
To this day, that is correct. But I think the flip side of that is understanding that through a properly, safely regulated program, that is the only chance that we will have for insurance to truly step in and start covering this. And so there needs to be a appreciation on both sides of the equation that should be the direction that we're moving. And that only happens if we have a safe and affordable program.
I wanted to talk a little bit of nuts and bolts for a second. There are dispensary and processor licenses.
Correct.
That will be handed out. What's the distinction?
Sure. So there are really three levels of what they call the vertical, where you have obviously the cultivation,
which is
the growers. The processing, which would be the product manufacturers. Think it's a botanical extraction process where they're removing the cannabinoid profiles and the essential oils from the plant and then creating alternative products and delivery mechanisms that would be associated with that. And then the dispensary, which is the point of sale where the patients will actually have access to the medicine.
Can anybody be all three?
We do have the potential for vertical integration. Unlike other states, you don't have to be vertically integrated. You don't have to do all three. But in Ohio, you have the potential to do all three.
The one aspect that you can't do in conjunction with the others is test the marijuana. That's okay. The fourth kind of license. Everything that will be sold under the law has to be tested to determine, you know, how much THC, CBD, and other, you know, compounds of marijuana are contained in it. Also, you know, whether there's mold or, you know, other contaminants that would be, you know, potentially damaging to the patient. So that will be an independent, you know, from someone that is selling you marijuana through that product chain.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. And in a little over a year, you should be able to purchase with a recommendation from a physician, a prescription or whatever you may, however they want to define it, medical marijuana in the state of Ohio. You'll have to qualify for it at some level. You have to be eligible for it. Certain kinds of illnesses will be covered by it. But it's not a done deal yet. It's going to take time. And as Ted Bebar just said, everything has to be functioning at full speed ahead by September 18th to make that deadline. If you have a question or comment about the legalities of it, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Ted Bebart's an attorney and member of the Ohio Medical Marijuana Advisory Committee. Also with us, Jackie Borchardt. She's Ohio politics and government reporter for Cleveland.com. Coming up, we're going to hear from a physician about what we know these days about medical marijuana and what it benefits. We're also going to be hearing from a city in central Ohio that has embraced the opportunity of the economics of medical marijuana. So if you have questions about that, you can hang on. There are the large cultivators pay one non-refundable application fee. What are the different, when it comes to cultivators, what are the different iterations of that?
Sure. So Ohio has chosen not to allow home grow first and foremost. So the medicine will all be produced by cultivators, licensed cultivators. There's 12 in two separate classes for a total of 24. The first is level one cultivators, and they have a marijuana cultivation area of 25,000 square feet. And that's kind of a nuanced discussion.
What is that? Could you tell listeners what 25,000 square feet is?
Sure. So, you know, you could have a 100,000 square foot building, but only 25,000 square feet of that could be designated for the vegetative stage and the flowering stage of the plant. And what they're trying to do is have appropriate controls on output. What you don't want to see is a massive amount of overproduction in the marketplace, where we've seen in other states that can lead, along with home grow, to leakage and diversion to the
dumping,
black market.
Getting it. Yeah. Okay.
Absolutely. So that is then scalable with the Department of Commerce's approval based on patient population numbers. And other factors that can be then doubled to 50,000 square feet as the market matures, and eventually for a total of 75,000 per all 12 of the level one cultivators.
Okay.
The level two cultivators have been a smaller kind of entry size to the marketplace. The Department of Commerce has made clear that they're trying to allow, you know, kind of an entry for other smaller, less funded market participants, and that marijuana cultivation area is 3,000 square feet with the potential to double to 6,000 and eventually 9,000.
What were the politics of this, Jackie? And are they is there still any? Do they talk about it at the State House?
As far as any further action on this issue, just to be brief, or you know, to be frank, I think most of the lawmakers saw what they did last year as, you know, a huge step forward, and you know, not much more needs to be done until we see how the program is working. But that said, they have the leaders that worked on this, both Republicans and Democrats, have said that you know, they are willing to go and fix things that don't work out. If something happens in this program where you know, along the line, we see that it's not going to be operational by the deadline, or you know, there was an unintended consequence of something that was put in the law, they have said they are more than willing to re-examine to reexamine that. But at this time, I mean, there's no discussions about, you know, legalizing for recreational use, for example. There's no appetite for that over at the State House.
Some critics have said that out-of-state investors have an edge over Ohioans. Ted Bebart, was there any effort made to make this an Ohio thing?
Sure. It's a fine line you're walking between having a program that would be preclusive of what would be the most experienced producers of this medicine.
Which are going to be from other states.
Which are going to be from other states. Otherwise, you know, you're naturally only going to be dealing with those who have been producing it illegally and not under the kind of testing regimes that Jackie had mentioned earlier. Or under a highly regulated environment, which is a very difficult process to traverse. So you have to make a decision at that point. Is this about purely economics for Ohioans, or is this truly about patients? Is this truly about ensuring that patients get the highest quality medicine, the safest medicine, and also a sophisticated range of products that, I mean, listen, senior citizens are not going to be smoking marijuana, nor should they be. They need topical lotions. They need lozenges. They need alternative delivery methods. You know, the kind of formulations that come through sophisticated operators who have experience in this and also have the funding to then survive a couple cold winters as the market matures and invest in the research that's going to develop those products and ensure that Ohio does become the first state to truly embrace a medical market that is not a stepping stone to recreational use.
But how do you stop a stepping stone? I mean, if they want to put it on the ballot again, they can.
Sure.
And it was pretty close.
Sure, it was. And I think had some different choices been made, it probably would have passed.
Uh-huh.
I think that the big picture as it comes to recreational is my political views are in no way opposed to the personal freedom issues. And I think the social justice questions that are behind this really beg for us to look very deeply at the adult use question. But at the same time, what we don't want is what we've seen in other states, which is for a recreational market to come in after a medicinal market, subsume that medicinal market, push all of the patients to a self-titration model that says, you go to the dispensary and figure it out. It alleviates the physician's responsibility in this to truly look at this issue for its true purposes. And I think that the other thing that happens here, and I know Jackie probably is hearing a lot of this at the State House, there is huge ramifications for Ohio's opioid crisis here in medicinal marijuana. Its ability to, and one of the few scientific studies that really point to conclusive evidence on what it does treat, is in the area of pain. And I really applaud Dr. Amol Soin, the president of the medical board at our last medical marijuana advisory committee meeting, stepping up and acknowledging that we really need to look at this as a potential solution for the opioid crisis and not get caught up in the traditional stigmatization of a gateway drug concept that, quite frankly, is specious in the evidence and also does nothing more than feed what we have as a black market problem when our kids have access to this medicine in its recreational form right now.
Some people don't understand that the cannabis, you know, in that the forms that you're talking about can treat a lot of different things depending on what type it is.
Absolutely.
And I've talked to people who have been to not the dispensaries, but just the marijuana, I guess just the recreational dispensaries, mm-hmm. in, say, Colorado, who say there's like tons of different kinds. They didn't mm-hmm. even know there was that many mm-hmm. kinds. And is it the same thing with medicinal? So there's certain kinds that treat certain things better than others, or is it not that sophisticated yet?
Well, it is that sophisticated, and you'll have the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Gary Wang from OSU,
yeah.
who's one of the few true endocannabinoid specialists in the country. And its component parts certainly do have therapeutic benefits across that range of illnesses, those that are qualifying conditions in Ohio and those that will be added later. I think it is important to keep in mind that we should not be painting in too broad of brushstrokes and making claims that aren't supported, because the plant doesn't deserve that any more than it deserves the devil weed stigma.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I think Dr. Wank and others of his sophistication and deep knowledge on the endocannabinoid system itself and not just the plant really are going to continue to come to the forefront.
The Ohio Department of Commerce, which, by the way, we invited to join the program today and declined the request, chose a firm in Dublin and companies in Arizona and Illinois to help score applications from marijuana cultivators. What do those companies bring to the – I mean, what do we know about what they bring to the table and what the scoring involves? What's the point?
It's hard for me to say. The Medical Marijuana Advisory Committee meets once a month at best. Sometimes we don't meet at all in a given month. In most instances, we're given the rules sometimes 2 hours before the meeting, other times 24 hours. We don't have any direct interaction with the executive agencies. And again, that's a committee and not a board or a commission. We don't do any rulemaking. We don't grant any licenses. So I unfortunately can't tell you at all what the qualifications of those individuals are or how they were chosen.
Well, I can't tell you today either. I've requested information on those firms last week after the controlling board approved the funding, and I still have not.
How much funding are we talking about?
So up to $150,000 for each one, and it was explained at the controlling board meeting when they made this request that that's an up to amount, that's a ceiling, and that they chose three different companies to assist with the scoring of the applications in the case that maybe one of them has a conflict of interest with a number of applicants, and then they would no longer use that consultant. Or, they might rely on one more than the other. I think the intent of hiring this outside help is to bring an additional check on reviewing these applications. You know, what we've seen in some other states, Maryland is the, I think, prime example of this, is after the Maryland officials made their selections, they were promptly served with lawsuits questioning the objectivity of the analysis of the cultivar applications. And one of
you
the
mean
big
by the losers.
Yeah, well, actually, they should have been the winners. Going into the application, they were told that it would be merit based, and the top whatever applicants on their ability to meet the qualifications for the license will get a license. And then during the process, the Maryland officials decided that after they had done that scoring, there was a area of the state that was didn't have anybody have a license. There just was no applicant from that area that rose to was above the cut line. So what they did is they decided to award a license to someone from that area, even though they were not, even though there were others that scored better than them. So that was a prime lawsuit. There also, I think, a separate lawsuit was on the lack of minority representation in how they were awarded. And, Ohio's law has something unique in it in that it says 15% of these marijuana business licenses must go to a minority owner or a company that has a certain percentage of minority ownership. And that's still kind of unclear right now on how that's going to shake out. Yeah, and how they're going to achieve it. I know questions were asked to the Commerce Department about how they plan to do that. And their only answer was, we're going to follow the law.
Working on it.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I have to say farewell to Ted Bibart. Thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate your time.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure. Thank you.
It's Ted Bibart, attorney and member of the Ohio Medical Marijuana Advisory Committee. I imagine we'll hear from him in the future. As things unfold over the next year, we'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Medical marijuana in Ohio was signed into law a year ago, but the state is still a year away, at least, from making it available to qualified patients. We're talking about how the economy of medical marijuana is unfolding in Ohio. Also, what we know about what medical marijuana is supposed to do to help people who need it. Naming grow operations and cultivators is is coming up on the agenda. Some cities, including Dublin and Upper Arlington, have established moratoriums on marijuana-related businesses. Others, including Johnstown and Licking County, have embraced the opportunity. Still with us is Cleveland.com reporter Jackie Borchardt. Joining us now is Ohio Medical Marijuana Advisory Committee member and professor of psychology and neuroscience at Ohio State, Gary Wink. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Adam. It's good to be here.
And joining us as well, Johnstown Village Manager Jim Lenner. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Jim, what did Johnstown consider in its deliberations regarding medical marijuana? Was it something that you did proactively, or was it more of a laissez-faire?
No, it was a little bit of combination of both. We have a business in Johnstown that was tied to the medical marijuana community. He came to our Village Council Economic Development Committee and asked us to look into this. And then we started researching it and finding out more and more about the industry and where the Ohio State legislation was going to go. And it was a good fit, and we embraced it. And so far, it's been a very interesting ride, and we have a lot of people interested in the Village of Johnstown.
What are the pros and cons? What were the factors that you considered in your deliberations?
The first thing was the new Village Council knew it was going to be legalized, you know, so we figured if it's going to be legalized in the state of Ohio, why not embrace it, learn about it, get to know the industry, which we have a great relationship with the industry, and then, you know, use that as a catalyst to create jobs, well-paying jobs, and kind of create a center for the industry. And if we're the first one in, you know, attract many cultivators, processors, and testing laboratories in the future.
You know, Jackie, obviously some cities and towns in Ohio have had put bans in place, or moratoriums, I guess they call them, on establishment of medical marijuana-related businesses. What do we know about what their reasonings are?
So I think most follow too, and I have to say that to Jim's credit, you know, back when most of these moratoriums were initially being placed, back when the law went into effect in September, you know, the rationale was this is brand new law to us and we want to study it more and find out what the impact on our community might be. And I think to Jim's credit, they actually did study it. Not only they didn't pass a moratorium, but they did really try to, you know, look at how this would impact their community. And I think a lot of places around the state that did pass those moratoriums did not actually follow through on that promise to look at the pros and the cons in their specific community. And that's why you saw a couple within the last couple months, several of those saying, well, we need to renew this because we need more time to look at this. We don't know what's coming. And to be honest, if you had been following this process at all in the last 6 months, you would know what's coming because the rules process has been very deliberative. The state has, you know, it's a couple months long process that these rules and regulations go through. It's not like all of a sudden, you know, in the middle of the night, they're going to come up with these rules and spring them on the cities. There's been opportunity for public comment. They haven't changed substantially from when they are drafted to when they are made final. We saw that with the cultivation rules. So I think at this point, there's two things. Cities are either still not, you know, haven't taken the time to look at it, or, you know, in some instances have looked at it and heard from their residents and saying that they don't want these businesses.
And they just don't want them because they just don't want them. Is there a rational reason for it?
There are a lot of concerns about public safety in this.
Because of they become targets for...
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you have a highly valuable product.
Black market product,
and it's,
right?
I mean, I think a lot of people also don't understand that the security requirements on being part of this business, and Jim can probably tell you more about that, but, you know, 24/7 security systems, you know, doors that need, you know, thousands of pounds of force to be opened. I mean, you know, fencing around it's definitely secure, but there are concerns about, you know, how much is it going to cost our police and fire to pay a little bit more attention to this or, you know, for increased calls. And I think those are, you know, valid things that cities are looking at, especially as, you know, we all know that those budgets for those services have decreased in the past 10 years,
particularly
or so.
In local governments. Right.
Right.
I want to switch gears real briefly. Dr. Wink, when we're talking about this issue, just in the last couple of years, it feels like the knowledge base about medical marijuana is so fluid and changing so fast. There's lots of studies out there now, right?
Well, there are a lot of studies on animals, and I think that's an important thing to consider. This law was written with complete ignorance to all science because we don't have any, in all fairness. All the evidence comes from either two sources. One, epidemiological evidence. So we've had billions of doses taken by millions of people over thousands of years, but we never collected any real hard data on that. And keep in mind that was in people who were burning a plant that wasn't genetically modified. The other source has been from people like me who do research on animals. That's where all the information's come from. Currently, the NIH, the U.S. government, does not support any researchers conducting clinical trials. So all of...
Even in states where it's legal?
Even in states where it's legal. People have made attempts. So today, the few publications that are out there are on studies in individuals that are being conducted in Europe. So our scientists go over there and find patients. So can you today go over to OSU and find a patient who has any of the listed diseases and administer a product to them? Absolutely not. This is a Schedule I compound. It is still federally regulated, and it is an offense to give it to humans. So unfortunately, when the DEA had an opportunity to change that a few months ago, they decided not to. So this means that if you're a physician, you need to consider whether or not you want to put yourself at risk. In addition, the way the statute was written was that there are some very onerous regulations on the physicians in order for them to apply it. So there are barriers. And also, let me just mention one important thing. The medical board of Ohio actually did an inquiry of all the MDs and DOs in the state of Ohio, all 88 counties. And what they found was that the overwhelming majority of them have no interest in recommending marijuana. The only individuals who do seem to live in Cleveland, Columbus, and Cincinnati.
Bigger city doctors. But when they say they have no interest, why?
Well, this is a very conservative group.
Liability issues?
Correct.
Or is it okay?
It's mostly liability. They don't want to lose their federal license, their DEA license to prescribe the medications that are approved. And also, it takes a lot of time to follow the patients. And also, they feel as though they don't know what they're doing. The Rules Committee is considering adding on 1 or 2 hours of continuing medical education for the docs, but we're not sure what we're going to tell them. We fear that most of the education is going to come from the dispensaries. And so we're trying to figure out ways of how do we get the dispensary individuals to help the patients.
You know, Jim Leonard, there's still a lot of questions, but Johnstown forges ahead with this. What convinced you that it was worth the risks, it was worth the possible extra expense, particularly in an environment where that market might not grow as quickly as people hope?
Yeah, so we had a business park that was floundering. I mean, it wasn't very active. So we thought, let's take a risk and welcome this industry into the village. And so far, you know, we think it's going to pay off, you know, depending on who gets the licenses. So it was an economic decision. It was also a decision to help the patients. If there are doctors that do make those recommendations, then great. Our residents are going to be able to have a quality of life increase, you know, for them. So it was a debated decision. I mean, we've been at it for almost 2 years now, just going back and forth, trying to figure out what we're doing. And
did the issue of some of the stigmas of marijuana come up?
Yeah.
I don't want people, a bunch of potheads running around town kind of a thing.
Education is key with the community. I mean, I've had people come up to me and say, well, I don't want to see people walking up and down the street smoking a joint. Great, because we're not going to have that, you know.
That's illegal under this law.
Right, yeah. So when you tell people, hey, this is a highly regulated, a highly secure facility, there's going to be, you know, well-paying jobs with the research and development and the cultivator, they kind of come on board. But at that first initial step of people thinking, oh, this is just going to be everybody smoking marijuana everywhere, they kind of come around to it.
You know, I just keep trying to visualize what people are thinking when you go to all the trouble to legalize medical marijuana, but you're not able to study it.
Well, people like me can study it easily on animals.
But on animals.
Correct.
But you can't follow patients who have been legitimately recommended or referred for it.
Well, once we overcome whatever rules that need to be in place or the, you know, whatever statutes are in place to prevent it.
At the federal level.
At the federal level, which is going to take a change that we don't see on the horizon, not with the current attorney general's views about it.
He wants to enforce
the
clock.
Regulations.
Yeah.
Correct. So now I've been teaching undergraduates about drugs in the brain for many decades. And what I've seen certainly is that in the past 5-10 years, 18 to 20 year olds, they don't care who uses marijuana. When they begin to legislate these rules and laws, they're going to allow anyone. It'll be recreational, as it is in Colorado, and they'll change how the FDA applies, you know, the scheduling. That will happen, but it's going to take time. Those of us on the Rules Committee can see that it's going to take years to get all these rules worked out. It's so complicated. So it isn't going to happen tomorrow. We just started growing or thinking about growing now. We're accepting applications. That will take time to grow the plant, to get the product. We've got to have it purified. We've also got to have it tested. There's a legislative kind of hurdle we need to overcome there, and then get it in dispensaries. And then ultimately, finally, we've got to start convincing doctors to recommend it. So you can see these are major hurdles.
I will say there is an interest in the legislature to study this more in Ohio. And that was at one point that was part of the bill was some funding to encourage that.
But is it the federal?
But look, in Ohio, where does a lot of our, you know, our public universities, OSU, OU, they do great research, but the public universities don't want to touch it because they're so federally entwined with funding and other regulations. So there is a desire, I think, from the State House to look at this, and I believe it is still part of how this is exactly going to work out has been figured out yet, but physicians will have to file some sort of annual, you know, report on the physicians that are recommending marijuana on what they've seen from their patients that they've recommended this to. So, I mean, at the very least, after the first year, hopefully you might see some more anecdotal type data. But yeah, like for the reasons that Dr. Wink mentioned, there's, that having the real clinical studies that doctors rely on to say, yes, this is
well, those
safe
are going to be years away if they haven't even started yet.
Actually, yeah, the doctors at OSU have asked us to provide them with clinical evidence to show that marijuana is, you know, actually beneficial for certain diseases. I would love to. That data does not exist. Epidemiological evidence makes some suggestions, but epidemiology does not prove anything.
What do we know from the studies that have been done on animals?
Well, actually, what we know a great deal. This has been going on for over, you know, like half a century, believe
yeah,
it or not.
Yeah, right.
So I want to make two points about that. What we know is that the plant contains molecules that are beneficial for a number of different symptoms, illnesses, diseases. It has some preventative properties. So let me give you one example. We know from the epidemiology that individuals today who are in their 60s and 70s who were smoking marijuana back in the 1960s are not getting Alzheimer's at the rate that they should be for their, you know, age group. That actually was something that led to some of my research about 10 years ago now, where I looked at the ability of cannabinoids in the brains of animals to reverse the effects of aging. So what we have found is that in the aged brain, marijuana turns out to be very beneficial. But in the very young brain, is as bad as you've always heard. Young brains are very vulnerable to marijuana. Old brains actually benefit from it. So to make the statement that marijuana is beneficial broadly is inaccurate, and we can understand the mechanisms why now. We also know that it has specifically some wonderful benefits for pain.
Well, let me just back up. I mean, we got say somebody smoked pot when they were 16 or 17 years old back in the day. It wasn't good for them back then. It made them a burnout, whatever, your brain on drugs, kind of a visualization that a lot of us have. But as an adult, as an older person in their 60s, 70s, and so forth, there's a beneficial.
Yes. You see, we don't know whether they were 16 when they were doing this. They may have been in their 20s. And I actually want to point something
out.
The question that always comes up that I think you've hinted at is, and this is the biggest question, does marijuana smoking cause psychosis? And there are people who say, yes, it does, and those who say, no, it doesn't. The reality is in between the two. So if you carry a genetic vulnerability and you smoke a lot of marijuana, it will unmask the symptoms. If you carry no genetic vulnerability, it will not. So if you make the statement marijuana causes psychosis, are you making a true statement? Yes. It just doesn't apply to you, maybe. Can you, Anne, test yourself genetically to determine whether you're safe?
Yeah.
No.
Can you? No.
No, because we don't know what genes cause schizophrenia.
Because we don't study. Yeah, okay.
Okay.
We did, yeah, okay.
So even if you did the 23andMe.com where they tested all your genes, we don't know whether you're at risk because we don't know what genes are involved. So you see, it's a psychotic roulette. Go ahead, test, see if you're vulnerable. Hmm. I can't tell you.
Jackie, just one more question while Jim Lehner is still here. As far as cities and towns across the state, have there been enough moratoriums where this is going to affect the ability of growers, cultivators, and dispensaries to open shop in a year or so, or what? Are there enough Johnstowns out there?
Yes, I think so. And I think Jim can talk about this, too, that although he was one of the first, you know, Johnstown was one of the first to, you know, roll out the red carpet, so to speak. Since then, several cities have reversed their moratoriums or let them expire, usually because they've spoken with someone who wants to start a business there and looked at business plans and forged a relationship with that applicant. And, you know, I'm hearing, you know, in Columbus alone, there's, you know, 12, 14 would want to be cultivators that the city mm-hmm. has signed off on. There's, you know, a half dozen more in Youngstown. I mean, there are certainly, you know, places where this can be grown. I think where people have run into obstacles is where you have someone, an Ohioan, who really wants to start the business in their own community. And they've hit a roadblock where, you know, their community like Westerville or Worthington, for example, isn't allowing it. And so they're having then to look outside of, you know, where they live to start their business.
And Jim Lehner, yeah, go ahead.
So those communities, Youngstown, Akron, the people that have let those moratoriums roll off, they're at a point now where we, as the village of Johnstown, were a year and a half ago.
Okay.
So they, I think, have gotten their education into what the industry can and
have you gotten a lot of queries?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely. Dozens of other communities have called and reached out. Hey, can we see your legislation? How are you handling this? What is this concern? So not only from the industry, townships, villages, cities, everybody.
And I think, too, to point out that six cultivator applicants from Johnstown, that's huge for a place like Johnstown when we're saying that there's also six, you know, for yeah. Youngstown or for right. Canton, a city of a much bigger size. So
right.
I think that speaks to the fact that they were, you know, more ahead of some of these
yeah.
other
yeah.
cities.
Per capita, the number's very high for Johnstown.
Dr. Wayne?
I just want to make one final comment and take us 10 to 15 years in the future because I no longer test products out of the plant. Scientists like me have gone on to other things. Drug companies in Europe know that this massive market in the U.S. will, in about 10 to 15 years, be completely open and recreational marijuana will be available. What I'm testing now and our colleagues are testing are compounds that Mother Nature never thought of. The companies in Europe, as soon as it's made available, you know, legal here in the U.S., are going to flood our market with little white pills that will be so much better, so much easier to use and safer to use and just as beneficial medically that we'll probably give up on the plant entirely. These are amazing molecules that will become available in
about 10 years. Well, the United States has been so behind the eight ball on this issue,
correct.
They have not been the beneficiary of the economic development
correct.
That it will bring.
They're just waiting for us to grow up.
All right. Gary Wink, professor of psychology and neuroscience at OSU, member of the Ohio Medical Marijuana Advisory Committee. Thanks for joining us. I hope you'll come back.
My pleasure.
And also Jim Lehner. I'm looking forward to seeing how it goes in Johnstown. Jim Lehner is the village manager in Johnstown, where they have embraced the economic development potential of medical marijuana. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
We'll continue our conversation. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Medical marijuana in Ohio was signed into law about a year ago, but the state is still about a year away from making it available to qualified patients, if then. The window to apply to cultivate medical marijuana closes this month. We're talking about what's at stake for growers going forward, and a lot of that has to do with the law. Still with us is Cleveland.com reporter Jackie Borchardt. And joining us now by phone is attorney Tom Herron of Seeley, Savage, Ebert and Gresh. Tom Herron specializes in Ohio medical marijuana regulations. Tom, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
From where you sit as a lawyer, how fixed are the state regulations at this point? How much can you bank on?
Well, so we know obviously that the cultivator regulations have been finalized. You know, we're in the middle of the application process for cultivators now, and I think by and large, what has been submitted to the Joint Committee on Agency Rule Review, which is the final step in the process for administrative rulemaking, I don't think we're going to see a ton of deviation from that at this point. We might see some tinkering around the edges based on, you know, potentially some comments at the public hearings on July 10th and July 11th. Mm. But by and large, I think we have a pretty good picture as far as what the industry is going to look like here. Obviously, the big outstanding item is where can folks locate dispensaries throughout the state.
Jackie?
On the dispensary issue?
Well, about the public hearings, what are they expecting to get out of those at this point?
I mean, if you look at what happened with the cultivator hearing that they had at this point, it was so late in the process that some of those comments made some minor changes, but the major changes that people were asking for weren't made either, one, because they would go against the statute, or two, they weren't made because they, I think the main complaint last time, if I remember correctly, with the cultivator rules that I heard from people at the public comment session were that there is no, you know, extra weight given if you were an Ohio resident, for example, or, you know, licenses set aside for Ohio residents or preference given to Ohio residents. And that is not part of the law that the legislature passed. They did not, you know, make that part of the law. So I think that the Department of Commerce then decided it wasn't necessary to put into the rules. It would have maybe exceeded their rulemaking authority. And I know there were also some complaints last time that there just wasn't enough time available to hear some of those comments. So this time having 2 days where people can come in and comment on things. Hopefully things will go a little better.
Thomas Herron, Attorney General Jeff Sessions has asked Congress to remove federal protections that prevent the Department of Justice from cracking down on medical marijuana patients, cultivators, and dispensaries that are in line with state laws. If he is granted his wish, how could that change the terrain for medical marijuana in Ohio? What do you anticipate?
Well, I think for starters, he's not going to get his wish. My sense is that Jeff Sessions is a drug warrior dinosaur sort of yelling into the void when it comes to...
And that even this very conservative Congress won't grant him his wish.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this has been a budget rider that has been on, you know, every appropriations bill for a number of years. And we've had, you know, in each of those times, a Republican controlled House. Mm-hmm. So and this is a bipartisan budget rider. You have Congressman Dana Rohrabacher, mm-hmm. Who's a big Trump supporter, and now Congressman Earl Blumenauer, who's a very progressive Democrat from Oregon, also supporting this budget rider. But assuming that Attorney General Sessions gets his wish, it could have a big impact on Ohio's market. The nice thing about where we're at in the process is that we're going to get a very good picture as far as what the Trump administration's approach is to legal marijuana before we get an operational market. When Attorney General Sessions was appointed and confirmed, he appointed this task force to study a host of Obama-era DOJ policies, including the Cole memo, mm-hmm. You know, that effectively started this sort of hands-off approach. They're set to report back to Attorney General Sessions next month. And so we're going to see the Trump administration's policy as it relates to legal marijuana well before we get any actual, you know, quote-unquote drug trafficking, you know, happening through a regulated market here in the state.
The issue of medical marijuana in the workplace has come up time and time again. What are the legal factors at this point?
So here in Ohio, House Bill 523 has almost no impact on employer drug-free workplace policies or an employer's ability to refuse to hire, fire, suspend, or take other sort of adverse employment action against an employee for using medical marijuana.
So it's on the strength is with the employer at this point.
Correct.
Yeah.
There was a slight change when it comes to unemployment compensation benefits.
Uh-huh.
If an employee is fired by the employer, the employee might still be able to obtain unemployment benefits if there was no sort of written policy prohibiting the use of medical marijuana.
What about the ADA, Americans for Disability Act, Americans with Disability Act, I should say. Is there any protections there for people who would be prescribed or referred for it?
So not under the current state of the law.
Okay.
There's no requirement for an employer to make reasonable accommodations, to allow an employee to use medical marijuana. Now, that being said, an employer has to be very careful that if the employer does take adverse employment action based on an employee's use of medical marijuana, that it's clear that adverse action is related to the use of cannabis and not related to the underlying condition or the request for a reasonable accommodation. I mean, you still can't fire somebody because they have Parkinson's disease,
mm-hmm.
right? But if that person uses medical marijuana in violation of a drug-free workplace policy and has a positive drug test, that can be a different story.
Kentucky's criminal ban on medical marijuana was recently challenged in a lawsuit touting cannabis as a viable alternative to ease addiction to opioids. We mentioned that earlier. What about the process of changing the qualifications for medical or changing the medical conditions that qualify for medical marijuana in Ohio? Is that going to be a difficult process?
Yes, I think it will be. When folks petition to add these conditions, they're going to need, basically a medical expert to come in and testify during the administrative process. And so there's going to have to be some support to add these conditions. And I think there's going to be some pushback when you try to get these, new conditions added through the administrative process.
What's it like working in an area of law where something like the medical expertise, it's out there, but it's never been tested on humans?
So we haven't had tests in the same fashion that you would test, sort of new drugs during FDA approval process. Mm-hmm. But there is a wealth of data. There's a wealth of studies that have been done relating to medical marijuana. And maybe it's not as rigorous as if you're testing a new prescription drug.
Mm-hmm.
But there is an enormous amount of data that does support the use of medical marijuana to treat various conditions and alleviate various symptoms. It's not going to cure conditions, but it will help address underlying symptoms and we've seen especially data after states have legalized medical marijuana as to the impact it can have on sort of other public health concerns.
Mm-hmm.
You see prescription overdose rates drop 25%. In states after they legalize medical marijuana. I mean, think what that means for Ohio's opioid abuse problem.
Hmm. Except that that's not one of the qualifying conditions.
Well, what happens is when folks go to the doctor and they're going to get a prescription for a chronic pain, for instance.
In the first place. Okay,
in the first place,
yeah.
they will substitute, Vicodin, OxyContin, Percocet, for medical marijuana. And then even during the course of treatment, if they start off on an opiate prescription drug, they can sort of start to supplant that with medical marijuana along the way.
Thomas Heron, thanks for joining us today. I appreciate your time.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thomas Heron is an associate attorney with Seeley, Savage, Ebert, and Garash and Company in Westlake, Ohio. He specializes in medical marijuana regulations. Jackie Borchardt, thank you so much for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
Jackie Borchardt, Ohio politics and government reporter for Cleveland.com. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.